The central lie of class is class. How we lost our voices. Nicola's legacy, Prince's legacy, the truth, they are all tied together, and 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. They lead to our freedom. Recall what Proudhon said. I beg the reader to consider that having begun with a paradox, I must, if I reason correctly, meet with paradoxes at every step and must end with paradoxes. And that's from our April 16, 2017 show, which was not last week, just 2 weeks ago. I misspoke earlier. It is in that light that we can most fruitfully probe the following quote and those that follow it from Karl Popper on Plato. And this is quoting Marx. And now, as to myself, no credit is due me for discovering the existence of classes in modern society or the struggle between them. Long before me, bourgeois historians had described the historical development of this class struggle, and bourgeois economists the economic anatomy of the classes. What I did that was new was to prove, one, that the existence of classes is only bound up with particular historical phases in the development of production, two, that the class struggle necessarily leads to the dictatorship of the proletariat, three, that this dictatorship itself only constitutes the transition to the abolition of all classes and to a classless society. And that is from Marx's letter to J. Weidemeyer of March 5th, 1852. And we originally discussed that in our Waking Up Radio show of September 13, 2015. And that audio excerpt is titled Plato's Racist Republic. The lies tumble into our minds before we have time, aka our lives, to notice them. So conditioned we've been to accept them. With two words, economic anatomy, the lie is pounded in as fact. Could he say this about the lilies of the field, that toil not, neither do they spin, or the ravens that neither sow nor reap, have neither storehouse nor barn? And I'm quoting the New Testament, St. Matthew 6:26 and St. Luke 12:24. What makes us different? By nature, says Plato in the Republic, no two of us are exactly alike. And these are now quotes from Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato. Each has his peculiar nature, some being fit for one kind of work and some for another. Is it better that a man should work in many crafts or that he should work in one only? Surely more will be produced and better and more easily if each man works in one occupation only according to his natural gifts. And that's quoting Plato. Now to Karl Popper. In this way, the economic principle of the division of labor is introduced, reminding us of the affinity between Plato's historicism and the materialist interpretation of history, referring to Marx. But this principle is based here upon an element of biological naturalism, namely upon the, I would say, so-called natural inequality of men. At first, this idea is introduced inconspicuously and, as it were, innocently, but we shall see that it has far-reaching consequences. Indeed, the only really important division of labor in the Republic turns out to be that between rulers and ruled, claimed to be based upon the natural inequality of masters and slaves, of wise and ignorant. Equalitarianism, says Karl Popper, was voiced by the sophist Hippias, whom Plato represents as addressing his audience thus, gentlemen, I believe that we are all kinsmen and friends and fellow citizens, if not by conventional law, then by nature. For by nature, likeness is an expression of kinship. But conventional law, the tyrant of mankind, compels us to do much that is against nature. And we're going to learn in a second that as he was writing and speaking, nature was the equivalent of truth, that word. Continuing with Popper, this spirit was bound up with the Athenian movement against slavery, to which Euripides gave expression, quote, "The name alone brings shame upon the slave, who can be excellent in every way and truly equal to the free-born man," unquote. Elsewhere, he says, "Man's law of nature is equality." And Alcidamas, a disciple of Gorgias and a contemporary of Plato, wrote, quote, "God has made all men free. No man is a slave by nature," unquote. Similar views are also expressed by Lycophron, another member of Gorgias's school. "The splendor of noble birth is imaginary," he says, "and its prerogatives are based upon a mere word." The voices of the clearly sane are not carefully harvested and protected for us across the millennia, you may have noticed. And then another, this last quote from Karl Popper, "Whether or not Tarn is right on Alexander, he hardly does full justice to the various extant statements of this 5th century equalitarian movement. For instance, to Antiphon, or Euripides, or Hippias, or Democritus, or to Diogenes and Antisthenes. I do not think that Antiphon wanted only to stress the biological kinship between men, for he was undoubtedly a social reformer, and by nature meant to him in truth. It therefore seems to me practically certain that he attacked the distinction between Greeks and barbarians as being fictitious." Tarn comments on Euripides' fragment, which states that a nobleman can range the world like an eagle the air, by remarking that, quote, "he knew that an eagle had a permanent home rock," unquote. But this remark does not do full justice to the fragment. For in order to be a cosmopolitan, one need not give up one's permanent home. In light of all this, I do not see why Diogenes' meaning was purely negative when he replied to the question, "Where are you from?" by saying that he was a cosmopolite, the citizen of the whole world. Especially if we consider that a similar answer, "I am a man of the world," is reported of Socrates, and another, "The wise man belongs to all countries, for the home of a great soul is the whole world," of Democritus, unquote, from Karl Popper. Class itself is, of course, a fantasy, an illusion, as Lycophron and 2,000 years later Proudhon said. We live our lives by lies. Why? Thought answers the question and sets earth under our feet again.